every day I pray, oh God, don't let me get too sick today. Don't let me get too sick because I won't be able to afford it.
A grassroots team is looking for local voices in the national health care reform debate. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, the 25th of June. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Alaskan soldiers aboard the USS Stennis participate in the military's Northern Edge training exercise.
It's not just our job at stake, it's your guys' lives at stake out there in the airplanes. We put forward more than 100% all day, every day.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by EcoTrust, working to encourage economic development, healthy communities, and healthy salmon in the Copper River watershed. On the web at ecotrust.org/copper river. Go deep inside Alaska, where the unparalleled meets the unexpected. Fairbanks emanates a quality of light, energy, and warmth found nowhere else on Earth. It's the unexpected Alaska. Fairbanks, located right in your own backyard, is full of activities from the mild to the wild. Experience summer's land of a midnight sun in Fairbanks. Information about attractions, travel, accommodations, and more online at explorefairbanks.com. This message sponsored by the Fairbanks Convention and Visitors Bureau.
On Capitol Hill, work on health care reform is reaching a fever pitch. But with Congress going on recess next week for the 4th of July holiday, crafting a health care bill will continue next month. The Senate Finance Committee is working on one version. Its committee head, Montanan Max Backus, announced today they're shaving costs and will have a plan with a price tag of about $1 trillion, down from previous estimates. However, the specifics have not yet been released. Meanwhile, the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee has been marking up its version of a bill for 2 weeks. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski sits on the Health Committee and says she's very disappointed with what's taking shape.
We have a bill that, in my opinion, does not fix the problem. It builds off of Medicare, which is a broken system.
Murkowski says doctors in Alaska are already turning away Medicare patients. She says health care reform is needed and calls the current system unsustainable.
I agree with President Obama. I think that we need to reduce health care costs, absolutely. We must increase access. And we also want to be able to assure people that they can have the doctors of their choice and keep the health care that they currently have if they like it.
Murkowski says it will take time to craft a bipartisan plan and criticizes the Democrats in charge of her committee for pushing too fast.
For me to contact the State Division of Insurance or to talk to Jerry Fuller, who's in charge of Medicare, Medicaid, and bounce some of these concepts off of him, I can't even do it before we're moved off that portion of the bill, and we haven't gotten the input from the states.
Murkowski says instead of a government-run system, she's interested in discussing a co-op plan, which would be owned and operated for the benefit of its members. Alaska Congressman Don Young says he's worried about how health care will be paid for.
I have now got great concerns because they're trying to tax to raise the money that those that already have health care. Otherwise, if I work for a company and this company provides health care, that's taxable income to raise the money. Now, wait a minute. You mean you're taxing me to take care of somebody that doesn't have health care right now? That's ridiculous.
Young says more money should go toward preventative care, but wouldn't say if it should come from the public or private side.
I'm not sure how that's going to work out. But, you know, right now, the system is too expensive. There's reasons why it's expensive. We're not addressing that.
The lone Democrat in the Alaska delegation is reserving his opinion on the various health care plans until they're more fully developed. Senator Mark Begich is part of a moderate Democrats group being watched closely for how they'll vote.
I think we have to be careful that we don't over use the role of government in this situation. I'm still patiently listening and learning. I mean, and I come from a person who's done health care reform.
Begich worked on healthcare as mayor of Anchorage. He'd like to see a mix of public and private options.
I've said on the campaign trail, I believe that people should be able to buy into the federal program that I get to buy into. They should have that option. Why not? I mean, it's a big group. You add a few more people, it's actually going to benefit the group in total. The larger the group, the lower the cost. That's how it works.
Begich is not on either of the Senate committees crafting the health care bills, but he said earlier this week that he's working on some ideas of his own and bouncing them off his colleagues. President Obama's grassroots team in Alaska launched an effort today to convince state residents to back health care reform. There isn't anything concrete on what that reform may ultimately look like, but the State Office of Organizing for America says it wants to make sure Alaskan voices are heard in the national discussion. APRN's Annie Feit reports.
A few years ago, Homer resident Kim Burrows went to the emergency room for what she thought was a stroke. As it turned out, she had a relatively mild neurological condition called Bell's palsy. It wasn't a long-term illness, but Burrows says the emergency room bill altered her life.
That trip to the emergency room cost me well over $1,000, and I had no medical. I was working full-time, single parent, and I had to quit my job to get on Medicaid. I became a ward. My son and I, my 16-year-old boy, we became wards of the state. We got a monthly check and then got food stamps, but I got my medical.
Burrows told her story at a news conference arranged by the Alaska Office of President Obama's grassroots effort, Organizing for America. The group is asking Alaskans like Burrows to make the case for reform. Maya Osorio is originally from Colombia. She says her family back home struggles to make a living, but they don't have to worry about health care. Osorio doesn't understand why it's so different in a wealthy country like the United States.
Every time that somebody say, check with the doctor for this, check with the doctor for that. In my mind, I say, that's a joke. How am I supposed to check with my doctor? I don't have a doctor. And if I go there, they're going to ask, do you have a health insurance? But every day I pray, oh God, don't let me get too sick today. Don't let me get too sick because I won't be able to afford it.
According to Organizing for America, only a quarter of small businesses in Alaska offer health insurance, the lowest rate in the country. The group says about 18% of Alaskans were uninsured in 2007. Jonathan Teeters is directing the local office of Organizing for America. He says Alaska has a lot of unique challenges when it comes to health care, and he wants to make sure those points are factored into the debate in Washington.
Our job is to listen to Alaskans, to take these stories of their challenges and of the opportunities that we have in this state to fix some of our broken pieces, and to make sure that those are heard, you know, in this state, in Washington, D.C., and that in the end, hopefully some of our particular challenges here are addressed.
One of the most controversial aspects of reform is an option that would allow people to buy into a government health plan that would compete with private insurers. But many Republicans say a public option wouldn't just compete with insurance companies, it would crush them. Teeter says he's worried the public plan idea will be tough to sell nationally. On the other hand, though, he hasn't heard much resistance to the idea in Alaska.
Most people, when I say that there's going to be a public option, their eyes light up and they say, great, so that means we're not just going to be shoved over to the insurance company somehow.
Teeters has the tough chore of whipping up enthusiasm in Alaska for complicated public policy during fishing season. And right now, he doesn't have a lot of details to help make the case for the plan. But he says there are some simple principles he's trying to communicate.
Here at home, we really just want to make sure that everybody has access, that we bring down the cost, and that people that already have coverage have a choice in what option they take.
Teeters says everyone in Alaska has been impacted by the healthcare system, one way or another. His job now is to make sure those stories are part of the national debate. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the flood-damaged community of Eagle looks to rebuild.
And we have a small core of people here that are skilled and can do it, but certainly not the manpower that we're going to need.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Alaska Pipeline Service Company, operating and maintaining the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide insurance coverage for Alaskans who may feel they have become uninsurable. It offers hope to people with certain high-risk chronic illnesses or those who have exhausted employer-based insurance, and to some under 65-year-olds who are Medicare eligible. Find out more. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. More information at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association.
The annual military training exercise known as Northern Edge wraps up tomorrow. It is the largest training held by the military in Alaska. 9,000 active duty National Guard and Reserve soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines participate from all across the country. This year, a Navy warship, the aircraft carrier John C. Stennis, was part of the training, launching fighter jets from their flight deck while they spent several days in the Gulf of Alaska, about 180 miles offshore. The nuclear-powered ship is a study in big numbers. The vessel is 24 stories tall, has a flight deck area of 4.5 acres, carries more than 70 aircraft, and has 5,000 crew members. In a 2-acre midship hangar bay, Lieutenant Chad Dulac explains how the Stennis can stay out for months and get resupplied by vessels that deliver everything from ice cream to fuel while still running at 13 knots.
At any given time, we can take about 30,000 gallons of fuel per minute on board the ship. We can hold 3.5 million gallons of fuel aboard the ship, as well as being able to take cargo and stores of excess of 500 pallets from everywhere.
The hangar bays also hold aircraft when they can't be on the flight deck.
We can only have about 45 aircraft on the flight deck at any one time to keep the flow of traffic moving smoothly. So those rest of those aircraft come down here. They're either down here for maintenance or they're down here for storage.
Ordnance or bombs are sent on elevators from deep in the ship, past the hangar bays and up to the flight deck.
And from up there, that is where all the munitions are loaded aboard the aircraft, and then they go out and do their missions. That's also where it is offloaded, is up on the flight deck. We do not fuel or service aircraft with fuel or ordnance down here in the hangar bay for safety reasons. So everything that we have is up there.
The ship is a complex maze of narrow steel corridors with heavy hatch doors and countless flights of steep staircases. Captain Joe Kuzmic has 3,000 of the 5,000 men and women aboard the Stennis under his command. Standing in the wheelhouse, he says the $3.5 billion nuclear-powered Stennis, commissioned in 1995, should be in service for about 50 years.
We refuel it once in the middle of its lifetime, so it goes for 25 years on a tank of gas, and then another 25. So it'll go a long way around the world many times.
When flight exercises are taking place, men in a cramped room called flight deck control move tiny toy-like planes around on a tabletop flight deck map. Aircraft handling officer Lieutenant Commander Charles Villegas says the plane replicas have color-coded pushpins that indicate their order in the lineup for launching.
Every aircraft on the flight deck right now with a green pin on the left side is going to be launched here in about 30 minutes. So as you look at it, it seems pretty simple.
Copy, 305 up and ready.
305. Viega says they have computerized mapping, but the hands-on movements of the pushpin planes helps new handlers understand the dynamics of aircraft traffic flow and allows them to quickly adjust for changing conditions, such as shifts in wind direction or intensity.
So he called for winds across the deck. Now this jet will be moving. As he's moving, I'll make the call here. See, props on the roll, heads up. Watch the props. Heads up, we're on L1. Props on the roll, danger.
Watching the jets take off from the flight deck is an eye-popping and ear-splitting experience. The jets are launched by steam catapults, going from a dead stop to nearly 200 miles per hour in about 1.3 seconds. A helpful lieutenant on the observation deck known as Vulture's Row explains the launch process.
This is about five guys that are checking different things aboard the ship. They take in the shooter, takes in, gives the signs up for everything's good. That's when you see a point. And then there's another gentleman that's over the button that actually looks around, makes sure everything, gives them a thumbs up. And then he's the one that actually pushes the button to launch the aircraft off the catapult. So.
The four catapults can launch a jet every 45 seconds off a very short runway. The lieutenant tries to give more statistics, but his voice is no match for a jet engine.
It's about 800 feet is how much it is. It takes less than 2 seconds for them to launch off. Once they start their flaps to go, and the shooter...
Thank you.
Back inside the Stennis, an Alaskan sailor from Pilot Station, 24-year-old seaman Elliot Edwards, says his 2 years in the Navy have been exciting.
We keep pretty much the safety of the ship, making sure we don't bump into small vessels, whales, icebergs, and stuff like that.
Edwards wants to be a bush pilot when he finishes his 4-year stint and plans to return to Pilot Station or Bethel. The Kodiak Island community of Port Lions is the home of Petty Officer 3rd Class John Conley. He's been in the Navy for 3 years and works as an air traffic controller. Only 20 years old, he takes his job seriously.
The training that we've had puts us in the mindset that, you know, we can't lose focus. We got to stay on top of our job 24/7. You know, it's not just our job at stake, it's your guys' lives at stake out there in the airplanes. So we put forward more than 100% all day, every day.
The USS John C. Stennis will soon end its 6-month deployment and heads back to Bremerton, Washington and San Diego in early July. Military officials say Northern Edge aids future planning and preparation for joint military missions, and Alaska is one of the last areas in the nation with enough space for full training maneuvers. Pictures are at our website, aprn.org. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski was elected into Republican leadership today. At a closed-door meeting, Murkowski won the unanimous support of her colleagues to become fifth in line in Senate Republican leadership. As vice chair of the Senate Republican Conference, she'll help craft party message and strategy. The position comes with 3 additional staffers. It's the lowest slot in elected leadership. Murkowski spoke at a press conference after it became official.
Part of what we need to do as a Republican conference, we build out the agenda, most certainly, but it's also very important how we explain what it is that we are offering to the American public.
The Republican Party has taken hits to its image in the last 2 weeks after South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford and Nevada Senator John Ensign revealed they have had extramarital affairs. Ensign is staying in the Senate, but he resigned last week from Republican leadership, which created the opening for Murkowski. South Dakota Senator John Thune got Ensign's slot as the 4th in leadership, and Murkowski is taking over Thune's position. Murkowski becomes the only woman and the only West Coast senator at the top of her conference.
The news in the past couple weeks, I don't think, has an impact one way or another on whether or not we should have a woman in leadership. I believe, as a female Republican from the northernmost state, that our leadership should be more representative of Republicans across the country.
Murkowski notes that there's strong representation of Southern Republicans and says there needs to be more diversity. She says Republicans need to express their solutions and plans rather than simply pushing back on Democrats' ideas.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. And by the UAF College of Engineering and Mines, providing early registration for fall engineering classes at 1-877-474-7390. Information at uaf.edu/CEM. Crane accidents are on the rise around the nation. Making sure that crane operators are properly trained and certified is crucial to minimizing accidents in Alaska. Equally important is ensuring that riggers and signal persons are adequately trained. More information is available at 1-800-656-4972. Good, safe jobs are Alaska's future. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
Plans are moving ahead in Eagle to replace homes destroyed by this spring's epic flood. Local builder Andy Basich is organizing the effort to get up to 20 houses constructed before winter. Basich says the idea is to pool disaster assistance funds individuals receive to get a good deal on materials and mass produce basic 16 by 20 two-story log cabins.
This should be an adequate home. It's a way to get a roof over people's heads. Very efficient to heat, and that's what we're looking for. Our biggest concern is we want to get people so that they're not living with other people for the winter, get things back to normal as soon as we can, and provide them with a good start for the future.
Basich is working with retailers to get discounted materials and says the community is reaching out to anyone willing to come to Eagle for a few days this summer to volunteer and help out with the project.
We are really counting on the volunteers to make this happen. We have a small core of people here that are skilled and can do it, but certainly not the manpower that we're going to need.
Basich says he's hoping to have between 15 and 30 carpenters working and putting up one to two homes a week. Most of the cabins will go on lots in a recently developed subdivision on higher ground in the new native village. The plan is to prefabricate cabin parts at a riverside staging area and then transport them to the new home sites for assembly. He says the houses, set up with water and sewer and some basic amenities, should cost about $30,000 each, the maximum amount the federal government pays people who lost their homes. A group of chefs from the Lower 48 are visiting Petersburg and Juneau this month to learn more about Alaska's fishing industry. The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute is hoping to educate the chefs about the seafood they're serving. KFSK's Alex Hotz reports.
Fishing is a vital part of Alaska's economy, so it should come as no surprise that Alaska's fishing industry wants to promote its products with some aggressive marketing. The organization in charge of doing that marketing is the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, and their latest initiative to sell Alaskan seafood to the Lower 48 involves bringing three high-profile chefs to Southeast. Carl Urey is ASMI's retail marketing specialist.
We have Chef Barton Seaver with Blue Ridge in Washington, D.C., and he is right now sort of an it chef as far as sustainable seafood. We're going to be hearing a lot more about him. We have Chef Ben Pollinger from Oceana in New York City. It's a great seafood restaurant, and he's a huge proponent of Alaska seafood. We have Chef Ryan Nelson with the Ocean Air Seafood Room in Indianapolis, and right now the Ocean Air is actually doing a year-long Alaska seafood promotion in conjunction with the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. So he has been a great proponent of Alaska seafood.
Urey said that although these chefs already serve Alaskan seafood in their restaurants, they haven't seen just where the fish comes from or how it's caught.
So we bring them on trips where they get out to see harvesting, processing, as well as learn about Alaska seafood or Alaska's fisheries management practices.
The group will have breakfast at Coastal Cold Storage. Then they'll move on to iSchool Seafoods and tour the cannery's facilities.
So they'll really get to see a lot of different product forms being produced, and this is product that goes all over the world.
That's Laura Fleming, the communications director for ASMI's Juneau office. Fleming said that after the cannery tour, the group will go out on the water to see how salmon are caught. She stressed that in addition to the fishing and production processes, the chefs will also learn about the region's commitment to sustainability.
Alaska has a tremendous positive story to tell in terms of sustainability. In the case of our state, it dates back to statehood and the crafting of the Constitution with a commitment to being a prudent steward of marine resources and to managing them for sustained yield.
Fleming said that spreading this message of sustainability is important because of the demographic that typically eats Alaskan seafood.
People who are better educated than average, they have a higher income than average. Those are your typical Alaska seafood consumers. And those people are more concerned than the average person in America about what's happening in the future.
By educating these chefs about the industry's sustainability efforts, the Marketing Institute hopes that consumers concerned with environmental issues will be more attracted to the region's products. In Petersburg, I'm Alex Hotz.
The state is closing the Gulkana River to sport fishing for king salmon. Area management biologist Mark Somerville says the closure, which takes effect June 29th, is in response to an apparently very weak Chinook return on the Copper River tributary.
Our counting tower counts are the lowest they've been since we've been running the tower. Angler reports have been mixed, but when we talk with anglers that have fished the river historically, overall catches are way down, and we feel at this point that there's enough indicators to say that the return is extremely low and that the only solution at this point is to close the fishery completely.
The sport fishing closure on the Galkana is just the latest management move in response to a poor king run on the entire Copper River system. The annual sport fish harvest of Copper River king salmon has already been reduced from 4 to 2, and sport fishermen are restricted to taking just one king per tributary. Dip netters were banned from taking kings earlier this month, and the commercial fleet has been denied access to an area where Chinook congregate at the mouth of the Copper River. Somerville says it's unclear just how weak the run is.
It appears right now that the number of kings coming up the river will be well below 40,000, and we're hoping that it'll stay above the 24,000 mark.
24,000 is the number of fish biologists estimate are needed to meet escapement goals for the entire Copper River system. Somerville says no harvest restrictions are anticipated for the Copper River subsistence harvest at this time. King salmon runs remain slow in south-central Alaska. Sport fishing for kings was curtailed on many salmon streams in mid-June, although state fish and game managers are keeping their fingers crossed that escapement goals will still be met. Sam Ivey is an assistant sport fish manager in the Palmer area. He says sport king fishing on the Deschka River remains closed, but other salmon streams are open to anglers.
It's a mixed bag. The Parks Highway streams, the big three, Willow Creek, Sheep, and Montana Creek, were fairly slow fishing this past weekend, but this next weekend is typically a real good weekend to fish those Parks Highway streams, which are open on Saturday, Sunday, and Mondays. And we are steering people to go up and fish those. We'd encourage people to go out and try it. If they don't do well in one spot, just move to the next stream.
Sports fish managers use historic run timing data in making projections. Ivy says the king run on the Little Susitna River is tracking much the same as last year.
We did make the escapement goal last year, and so for right now, we don't expect any changes on the Little Susitna River. Up on the Talkeetna River up north, we've had fair to good success the last several days, so it's looking okay up there. And then the Yetna River tributaries had been slow this last week, but this week is typically really good up there, so we expect a lot of anglers will be going up to Lake Creek and some of those other smaller tributaries.
Fish and Game monitors 24 creeks in the Matanuska-Susitna area. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks and Alex Hotz in Petersburg. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Ellen Lockyer from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Gooseberry Peter. Our intern is Susanna Caldwell. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the Rasmussen Foundation, partnering with Alaska's nonprofits and people to improve the quality of life throughout our state. Learn more at rasmussen.org. And by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. Want to break your tobacco addiction? Call the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line at 1-888-842-QUIT. Register for free Quit Line counseling and nicotine replacement patches. The combined counseling and patches increase your chances of quitting for good. Trained quit coaches will help you set a quit date and send you information. Free quit services are available to all Alaskans. This message is from the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line, 1-888-842-7848. Didn't quite catch that report? Want to hear it again? APRN can be heard on the web at www.aprn.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.